Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out for WrestlingObserver.com. We return back to our regular programming with our friend Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics dropping by once again for our AEW Quarterly Business Review, formerly called The Investor's Call. We look at the months of October, November, December 2024 in the business world of AEW, talk about all the different happenings, a little bit on the TV deal, but more, because that's been talked to death. We talk about kind of what we thought about the launch of AEW on Max and also how it compared to the launch of WWE on Netflix and all the other business things that happened the month, forecasting, all types of fun stuff. So have a grand old time with us here for the next hour plus on Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Brandon Thurston and myself for our quarterly talk about AEW business, looking at October, November, and December 2024. Enjoy. We return for the first of our quarterly visits with Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics. We continue our tradition of talking about AEW quarterly business, investors call. We used to call this quarterly business review. So we'll talk about the final 3 months of a, at times, tumultuous time for AEW. I feel like, you know, we say these things and everyone's like, well, no kidding. But it's good to actually recap this stuff, put some numbers behind it, and kind of talk about the future, right?
I thought I heard somebody say one time, you know, at this time in history, it was a very crucial time in the Middle East. I think you could probably say that, as always, you could probably say that about AEW too. It's a crucial time in AEW's history right now.
Exactly. Very crucial time. So we'll talk about, October, November, and December. And we'll also go over some ring numbers, and maybe we'll get some year-long thoughts from Brandon. Of course, you can check him out at WrestleNomics, WrestleNomics.com. $5 gets you in the door. $10 gets you even more data you can regale your friends and family with, as we've said before.
We're on Substack now, too, if you want to subscribe there.
That's right. Yes. And I should say, this is a rare podcast appearance of, in a sense, in that you're still doing Pollock and Thurston, but you're no longer doing WrestleNomics Radio on Sundays. You're reading reading your brand new newsletter that's come out.
It turns out I'm still doing audio every
yeah that's
every
true
weekend.
I don't know what I'm saying, yeah. Just in a different way.
Well, I didn't fully expect it, but yeah, I am reading the newsletter that I'm now writing and releasing every Friday night as we record this today. There should be a new issue that I have not yet started writing out on Friday night this coming week. And I also, then I'll, a day or two later, let's not overpromise here, I will read it in audio and it'll be available. And in fact, so that's on Patreon. And Patreon is still the best place to subscribe and get all of the WrestleNomics content. But there's also, if you just want the newsletter, it's the same price on Substack. I've also been posting the quarter hours there, which I know people are interested in. That is also on Substack. And in fact, if you subscribe on Substack, this part is not available on Patreon. You can actually listen to an AI voice read my content to you.
Really?
I think immediately. Only on the mobile app. Yeah.
Gotcha. How did you pick the voice? Or did you have any options?
I think the user has a number of options.
Okay. Got it. All right.
Something like I had to decide to do. I was just like looking at the Substack app and I like pulled up my article and it had like an audio option. And then you can just have an AI voice read it to you.
It'd be great if you could read it like with a festive flair or disappointed tone, or, you know, just choose things you could choose.
ChatGPT has I think it's probably gone now, but they had a Santa voice that you could use. I'm serious.
Okay.
Yes.
Huh. Interesting.
It had kind of an Irish accent to it up there in the North Pole.
Interesting. Huh.
Yeah.
Huh. Imagine you could choose your favorite wrestling personality to read ratings to you and all this information.
That sounds like an IP issue.
Mm. Nick Khan, Triple H, Mark Shapiro. I would pick Mark Shapiro. He's a favorite of yours and John's. I know he's a favorite of mine as well. Yes.
The industry logic.
Yes.
We are over delivering.
Still my favorite. EBITDA. I think it might be Andrew Schleimer, but the quarterly calls, EBITDA, they really keep the going. It's every time I hear it.
Well, they just really love amortization.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't? All right. Let's talk about some of the big stories. Again, we just kind of go over all of the business points and so on that we know about, and some we don't know about for the final quarter of 2024. The big stories, we talked about this on the last episode, so we won't regale everyone rehashing everything here, but AEW and WBD, right at the beginning of the month of October, officially announcing the multi-year TV rights renewal. That meant that Rampage and Battle of the Belts were done. Simulcast on Max, which began right at the first of the year, January 1st. That also meant that the content library would be coming to Max as well. We learned about that. Kind of news trickled out on that first day. There was still many things unclear, which is always fun when you're writing stories from press releases and so on, not knowing exactly what the details are. But however, we would learn that it's it's year one, 2019, in terms of specials and all the dynamites that ran during that year. So they're kind of trickling this out slowly. I expect to have a lot more as time goes along. They also did a random run of content near the end of 2024 as well. It's like October through halfway through December. There was some stuff missing there. That's what they rolled out in that first few weeks or so. And pay-per-view capability coming at some point in 2025. We don't know when, what. We do know that the promise has been pay-per-views at a discount. Obviously, the ESPN UFC style where you pay a subscription price for the access to buy pay-per-views. However, they're expected to keep on Triller.
Will the discount be more or less than a subscription to Max? Do you
think? That's what I'm wondering. So I guess it'd be interesting to see what crossover of fans actually have Max already, because I have Max already. So it's a nice benefit for me because I'm going to have it regardless. So yeah, that is a kind of an interesting point how many people actually are going to have to add this on and have the right to buy a pay-per-view. So I remember when this first started with UFC, people were really annoyed by this. Like, I have to pay for the right to pay you more to see this. What, this doesn't make any sense. And all these,
and that was later, early in the streaming game. So yeah,
it was. Yeah. Yeah. But now, people, UFC fans are more than happy. That's just part of the deal. That's the thing, is these providers, I've always said it. They go after fan bases that are regularly used to paying for content, which is pro wrestling and fighting, boxing, MMA, all that. Because in baseball, football, they're not used to paying for it unless you go. You can just watch, with your cable subscription, all this. So, we talked about this. You've said play on this. I have. So many people have. What kind of flip this a little bit? What did you think of the first of the Max simulcast rollout in terms of just? Because this is going in concert with the WWE Netflix rollout, which are two different animals. But
we've crossed the threshold in wrestling history, media distribution.
Yes, yes. What a time to be alive. So my thought was Max put zero effort into making this feel like anything.
Not much marketing, especially in contrast, I guess, to the Netflix promotion, which you could not miss. I had to look at big Raw graphics at my grandmother's house on Christmas Day when I fired up Netflix to watch the NFL game. You had CM Punk. Well, this isn't a W show. But you had CM Punk on the desk there. Yeah, I guess I don't think I saw any promotion for it. Maybe there was a little, but I didn't. I don't remember any.
Yeah,
and granted, outside of AEW's own promotion of it, of course. The mother all simulcasts.
AEW, they did their part in getting this in the, you couldn't miss it if you were watching AEW TV, and that whole mother of all simulcasts you mentioned, I think it's an awful catchphrase, but regardless, promising something big. But Max, this is what, and I understand it was different in that WWE is moving basically everything internationally plus Raw domestically to Netflix. Yeah. It's a much bigger thing, much bigger money impact and all that. But
this is not a simulcast for them. This is a totally different thing. Yeah.
Right. But if you're Max, if Max thought that this is really going to mean something for their existing subscribers, they put in like,
or no, for new subscribers who don't have cable.
Yeah. Right. They didn't put anything to make it seem like it was a big deal. Like to the non-wrestling fan, they may be like, oh, there may be something here. So I was underwhelmed by that. And just a little bit, it's kind of just a little like red flag to me about like how much they care, even if
this is part of the new deal. The vibes we got were that Tony really wanted streaming to be a part. I wonder if they were as enthusiastic about including streaming into this renewal. Don't know.
I wonder as well. And the thing is too, I'm surprised about not making a bigger push about it. they, if they allegedly own, have a percentage in AEW, which we assume if it is, it's less than 10%, or else they have to disclose it, right? You know, Tony's Tony's not said yes or no, which usually means yes.
Yes.
And you would think they would be like, okay, let's get some more juice out of this. Maybe that's coming at the end of the year. But the other thing that really stuck out to me is, you know, the people say, you know, LA and New York are the media capitals of the world, right? You live in New York State. However, New York City, I've heard, is much more of a media threat, a buzzworthy place than Buffalo. No offense.
That's what I've heard. At least we have an NFL team.
That's true. That's true. They AEW was in New York City for essentially leading into Christmas week with three shows at the Hammerstein. And there was plenty of chance. I know it's the holidays, but it's plenty of chance to do some sort of media event if you're Max. And they did nothing. And WB held two media events. They held one at Stanford, this big party, and then they did the one in LA. I was just the lack of effort. I was a little bit alarmed by, and that just stuck out to me. So I was kind of curious what your thoughts were about that.
No, that's a good point. I haven't put a lot of thought into it that there wasn't. I mean, certainly in contrast, again, it's a bigger thing. Netflix is not a simulcast alongside a traditional broadcast, and it's part of a brand new deal going into effect, not just in the United States, but globally. And it's a much bigger money deal, right? Even if you just average it out to the year, to the market. But yeah, it's there are other things to offset this, but it tells you where AEW stands in WBD's list of priorities.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The other thing is, I thought the first shows were underwhelming from a news perspective. Like WWE, I mean, the first Raw, there was all types of news coming out of that, and you know, a lot of just buzz going in. But the first show, it came after World's End. AEW has not traditionally been great when it comes to their follow-ups to pay-per-views the first week after. Usually it's like the couple weeks after they kind of start getting going again. But as far as like for a first show back, it just didn't have that. Like if you're trying to draw in a new audience, and if you had some people on Max who are watching for the first time, I didn't see anything there. It's like, wow, this is really intriguing. Whereas weeks after, there's a little bit more meat on the bone there. So I was just underwhelmed by that. And I guess we'll kind of see how things play out through the year. The other big news I thought for the month was that All in Texas went on sale, clearing the $1 million mark in ticket sales, and Starcast returning. They're going to do this big kind of lead in with All in Texas week. And now they're going to have competition that night with a Saturday night's main event running head to head.
Maybe, probably. We were checking that on the air yesterday, and it looks like they have this Peacock schedule had a schedule that anybody could look at that had two additional dates. One of them for Saturday night's main event. One of them being July 12th, and now it's gone. I haven't looked today, but as of yesterday, they removed that.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So as who knows, maybe they could change. We don't know locations for that or anything. So it's possible they haven't booked a venue, but maybe they have. And that would probably hurt. That's the product that you could run the most competition against. And I think it would have the most durability because it's a pay-per-view product that your more hardcore fans that are less likely to turn away from. So it would have an effect, I think. You know, Tony Khan's been pretty, maybe somebody asked him about Orlando, the Orlando house show that they ran head to head with World's End. And Tony Khan was asked about it. And he said, it just shows how strong the wrestling business is right now. Very graceful response.
That's right. Maybe they should run Saturday Night's Main Event out of the American Airlines Center in Dallas, right?
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Maybe it'll be available.
You never know. But yeah, and some of the narrative of this, of course, is that, yeah, it's $1 million. I think it was 1.25 after that first week, but it's higher ticket prices.
Imagine if they ran the American Airlines Arena and had a bigger attendance.
There's a lot of time to go between now and July. That's all these things happen. But yeah, the narrative was kind of like, oh, over $1 million, big deal. And because they didn't really sell like a ton of tickets, all that stuff. It's kind of where we're at, where $1 million isn't a lot for a gate, but it is. It's significant, I think, just in the scale of things with a stadium show. And I think they have, you know, well over, I know what the last WrestleTix number of, I think it's over 10,000 So far to this point.
Well, they don't do $1 million gates very often, AEW, these days.
No.
We do know, I don't want to jump ahead, but we do know, like, Wrestle Dream, we do have a gate for that event, and it did just under $500,000. So a pay-per-view did under $500,000 for a gate. So $1 million gate is a big deal. And these were high ticket prices. And I think a lot of their VIP packages put it over the edge pretty early.
Yep. Some other key developments throughout the quarter, business-wise, Grand Slam Australia had to move to a new venue from Suncorp Stadium to the Brisbane Entertainment Center, if I know that correctly, remember that correctly. The company moved, a lot of moving of dates, moved their December edition of Collision to the GalaxyCon convention instead. The company announced a deal with Fox Sports Mexico after WB departed the network.
With Fox?
Yes, Fox Sports Mexico, though.
Are we going to talk about Fox? Now or later?
We can talk about whenever you like.
So there were rumors of a deal with Fox and you know, media reporter Swerve Strickland, I believe, broke this news that perhaps AEW would be moving to Fox with the absence of SmackDown on Fox.
The Simpsons, Family Guy, AEW Shockwave.
You could see some plausibility for this in the notion that certainly AEW would want something like that. They would love to be on a major broadcast network that would put them into incrementally more homes than just TNT, TBS, and even Max put them in. So it'd be into more homes with maybe Fox or a different broadcast or whatever it may be. There's a trademark for AEW Shockwave that AEW did apply for. Nothing has come to fruition. And I'm now figuring this isn't going to happen at this point.
I don't think so either. Why would they? I mean, it just, there's, we've seen what the numbers are on both Dynamite and Collision. So you're going to add a third show in. I don't see, if you're Fox, what's the point? What are you trying to get out of it? And you're going,
I mean, it would be a lot cheaper than SmackDown. It would be a lower viewership. It would be like maybe half the viewership, but a quarter of the price, something like that, let's say. And we know why Fox dropped SmackDown or didn't bid strongly for it is because they just couldn't, from Lachlan Murdoch's own mouth, they just couldn't monetize to the extent that they had hoped. So they're not going to monetize AEW better, but AEW would be a lot cheaper.
If they wanted to be in the wrestling business, which they may just not. I mean, I think they're putting on UFL, right? The Rock's, the former XFL to whatever.
Sports-like presentation.
Yes, sports-like presentation. AEW and ITV announced the extension of their UK deal and TV, or UK TV deal, rather. AEW signed an extension with TSN and also Collision Center USA network, except in Canada. So
yes.
How about that?
Tony said they got an increase in rights fees for this.
Multiple great offers and interest. And what he said in that media call essentially is that it sounded like if he wanted to stay on TSN and there was something there where they wanted something about, there was something there where I'm trying to remember what the phrase was, but he didn't, I think he liked having a little bit more control and having both, having on two different networks for whatever reason. There was some reason that.
Well, Dynamite is on traditional TV in Canada. And until this point, I believe Collision and Rampage had not been on traditional TV, but this will put Collision, obviously Rampage is going to go away, but this will put Collision on some form of traditional TV. I asked John Pollock if he has access to the USA network in Canada. And he was like, I don't know.
I think it was in relation to Sportsnet. He didn't say it by name, but essentially I think he intimated that Sportsnet wanted everything and he didn't want to have them have everything. So that's why they signed TNA and what have you, something along those lines. There's one, the media calls the way he phrased it. It sound like, Sportsnet.
Well, this USA Network and TSN are both owned by Bell, right? So this is all one company that they have. They didn't make two separate deals in Canada.
I don't understand why there's a USA Network in Canada.
It's a rebranded network that used to be Discovery, I understand.
Yeah, they
rebranded it upon the new year. Yeah. How that works with an NBC brand, which is USA Network, I have not investigated.
Very weird. Very weird. Dynamite celebrated 5 years. Happy birthday. AEW Meal in the Match, the content extension, the brand extension, return with new episodes on TBS's YouTube, I guess. Maybe one or two episodes. The company got in bed with Axl Rose. Not once. But twice with November Rain and then Welcome to the Jungle, promote both Full Gear and World's End. Axel or Slash did not make an appearance during AEW events. I was very disappointed with that. This was one I have heard nothing about in terms of any type of like positive buzz. AEW making changes to the in-arena fan experience for 2025. I don't know. Again, I haven't heard anything of that. I think it'd have to do more of an eyewitness.
Where does that tidbit come from? What was said?
That was from Mike Mansoury.
Okay. And
Mike Mansoury did an interview. I was talking about a lot of tech trade publications and talking about, oh, we're updating the video things and, oh, we're doing these type of new cameras. One of these really tech heavy things. And they talked about making changes to that in arena fan experience. So the idea of that, you know, when they go to commercial, to have it be more than Justin Roberts saying, how you doing? That's a great sign over there. And maybe have more of something that's going to actually keep fans engaged and kind of kill that time a little bit more effectively. I haven't heard anything about this, but it's maybe a thing where you have to see it in person to actually experience if there's any type of difference or not.
When's the last time you were at an AEW show live?
November.
Okay. So that's much more recently than me.
Yeah.
But when I was at a show, I think it's the last time the Dynamo was in Buffalo, there were promos that were being aired on TV, but the audio, so we could see on the big screen, we could see the promos, but we could not hear them. At least one instance.
Yeah. My favorite in November was not having any, the fans at home watching knew a match or two for Rampage, but the people in the arena had no idea what was going on. And Tony Khan says, like, oh, you know, stay around for, you know, great Rampage lineup. And never said anything about who was on the show. And
hadn't booked it yet.
Yeah, it could have been doing it between.
Maybe booked it right after you went back.
That's true. I just, those things, they're like so easy to do. There's also an MJF appearance when he was doing, they did these little video insets pretending he was watching live. And that didn't air for the live crowd either. It aired at home, but not for the live crowd. So it was all these things where nothing seems to sync up. So I don't know if that's part of that.
So you watched a Rampage live and then you went home and watched it again on television.
No, sorry, for Dynamite. No, I definitely not do that. For Dynamite, there was the MJF segment, and because I remember Brian and Dave were talking about it. I'm like,
okay,
you know, MJF made a face or did something like that. I'm like, MJF, he wasn't there. And then I went back and I'm like, oh, they didn't show that at all. it's very strange. So yeah, Perhaps that's it. Actually, having the in-arena fans know what's going on TV. Ring of Honor reportedly closing in on a TV deal. That's not happened.
And, you know, John Oran, who's now with Puck, before this renewal for AEW and WBD happened, he mentioned True TV as a home for, he didn't specify, but I assumed it would be replay episodes or something like that. None of that has materialized yet.
Are they airing? I think on Fridays on Fridays, breaking news. Friday on True TV, they are doing, it started after the second week. So it would have been last Friday was the first one.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's news to me.
I assume it was on the regular, but yeah, they were
2 weeks ago. I'm behind on that. Okay.
Yeah. They didn't do, I don't know why they didn't do it for the first one. Cause I looked at the schedule and they had like a movie on True TV at like, I think they're running them at 10 o'clock on Fridays, if I remember right. So yeah, so they are doing a replay on Fridays. So yeah, they didn't do it for the first one.
11 o'clock, I see here on the schedule.
That could be it.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. Eight partners on a day that WB and TNA decided to extend their deal, which you can tell by the mainstream media, because it got picked up on ESPN, that people had no idea about they were doing this for the last year. They're like, oh, this is so great. This is so great. Some of these other, you know, big personalities that don't pay attention to wrestling at all.
ESPN broke it somehow like 15 minutes before I got the press release too.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. AEW, conversely, had a lot of drama with GCW about these Hammerstein ballroom dates.
Yes.
Running three shows. Of course, GCW rang this Sunday. Brett Lardell said, you know, not ideal. We'll get more about that relationship in our HR segment in just a minute. AEW debut, set to make their debut at LA's Crypto.com Arena, the former Staples Center. Of course, that being made possible for March's Revolution, that being made possible because WWE broke their exclusivity deal, going to the Intuit Dome for the debut of Raw. So AEW swooped right in and said, well, we'll take that. And Crypto.com said, fine, we'll pay you in Bitcoin. And here we go.
There we go.
Tony Khan addressed the future of AEW video games because people don't seem like Fight Forever. They're going to stick with that for a while. They basically said they're going to be looking at other developers, or said that there will be some changes coming at some point. Who knows?
And that would mean somebody instead of Yuke's. Is that right?
Yes, Yuke's. Yuke's, who he propped up for years.
Or is Yuke's the publisher?
I think Yuke's was the developer, right?
You talk. I'll look it up.
Good. On a day when Bob Uecker can be passed away as well. RIP, age 90, WB Hall of Famer. But
publisher is THQ and the developer is Yuke's. Okay.
Okay. But yeah, essentially they're going to be potentially looking at other developers for that. And also I include this in one thing company has been really good about is making donations to events that affect talent. North Carolina hurricane victims, they did some unspecified donations to Q4 that would obviously lead to Fight the Fallen on January 1st in Asheville. And we don't hear a lot from the WB TKO side of those things, but AEW seems to, they do this a lot, and they do it in a way which I don't think is like, look at us. I think they do it kind of natural way. So I know they get a lot of shit for stuff, but I think with the donations and things like that, they do a pretty good job with that.
Right. Yeah. Maybe we'll see them do something for the fires and when they go to LA, we'll see.
That's a good point. I would expect that as well. Live ticketed events. I had 26, 13 Dynamites, 9 Collisions, 3 pay-per-views, and 1 PLE. Of course, the 3 pay-per-views being Wrestle Dream in Tacoma, Washington. 105,000 estimated pay-per-view buys, 76,28 in attendance, and a gate of over $456,000. You were just saying about that just a minute ago. Full Gear in Newark, New Jersey. Beautiful Newark, New Jersey. 113,000 estimated pay-per-view buys, just over 10,000 attendance, and no live gate reported there. World's End in Orlando, of course, happening the same night, as we mentioned. WWE live event was happening right down the street. The buys were their highest, is what Dave reported. The buys, the highest since All In. So it was over 113,000 minimum. And so we have no idea what that is, but apparently World's End did really well. So how about that? Just over 7,000, and we had no idea about the live gate. And then they held an event at the Hammerstein with ROH Final Battle. We don't know any gay information, but I think it was basically a sellout, like probably 1,500 people, something like that. So, yeah, live ticket events. No big change here other than one. I think for the last quarter, there's like one or two less collisions because they did some combo tapings around the holidays. And, yeah, not too much different there. And we'll talk about
that. Yeah, I have 8 collisions compared to 12 in this quarter last year.
Okay. You have 8 collisions.
Yeah. Did you put your number, your count in here? You have 10 collisions.
Live ticket events and total TV broadcasts. So live ticket events are 9 separate collision events. That's what I had. We can compare numbers later.
Okay.
Yes.
The pay-per-views, they're going to end up with more. I mean, they're going to end up with slightly more total pay-per-view buys, probably, according to these reports, than they did last year, slightly. And that's with one more pay-per-view event, because they did a Dynasty in this year that they did not do in the prior year.
Right.
So I've got a number somewhere around 1.16 million total buys versus last year of just 1.1.
Gotcha. All right. Well, consistent. I mean, with all their metrics being down, I guess that's good, even though they had more. So really, it's a year ahead that we'll kind of be looking at to see how they perform in that aspect. Yep.
Yeah. And people have been pointing out to me, well, the pay-per-view is holding up. So how many pay-per-views? They had, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 pay-per-views in 2024. 7 out of 9 were lower than the same pay-per-view of the prior year. The ones that were up were Revolution with Sting's retirement.
Yep.
And All Out, which was up 5%.
Got it. Okay. Well, I guess my slight optimism is now dampened. Everything going down.
That's what I do.
That's total TV broadcast. I had 13 Dynamites, 10 Collisions, 13 Rampages, RIP, and 1 Battle of the Belts, also RIP. Linear TV hours, including commercial time, 60. That's what I have.
Sounds good.
Let's talk attendance in your ratings PDF. You can find this exclusively at WrestleNomics.com. And let's go over some KPIs, Brandon, key performance indicators. What stood out to you as we go through this?
TV ratings are down still. We've got Dynamite in this quarter down 35% in the demo. Collision down 25%. Rampage in its final episodes down 36%. I mean, these are pretty significant declines. All right, what about total viewership, though? That doesn't look much better. Dynamite down 27%. Collision down 22%. Rampage down 23%. What about cord cutting? Cord cutting is significant. It's not this bad. Cord cutting is probably 9-10%. So if you want to offset that, we're talking declines of 20-30% here, which I think is reflective of the popularity of the product.
When you talk about cord cutting, I think we mentioned this last time. Cord cutting means I have no access to this stuff at all with a subscription. Or, like, for example, I have YouTube TV. Am I a cord cutter or not?
No, you're in the bundle.
Gotcha. So as long as I have some sort of access to something that I pay for, I am.
You are one of the 70 million households like me who are in the bundle. There's about 120 million U.S. households with televisions. So there's some, what is that? About 50 million that have TVs that don't have YouTube TV or Comcast or Spectrum, DirecTV, whatever it is. We have what are called the virtual MVPDs. I always forget what MVPD stands for. It just means cable, satellite, YouTube TV, Hulu Live TV, Sling, all that stuff is the MVPD. And it's declining. There's only about 70 million of us left, but it's declining about 9% year over year.
Gotcha. And how many worldwide subscribers they have? Is it 60 million?
Max has about 50 million U.S. subscribers. Now,
U.S. subscribers. Okay.
Now, everybody who subscribes to HBO on their cable system gets access to Max. I think everybody. So I always want to contrast that against how much are people actually using Max. And Max is in the top 10 among streaming services, but it's in the lower part of the top 10. When we know this because Nielsen, and this is, I'm talking about actual usage. Nielsen publishes their gauge donut chart that just looks delicious every month that they publish it. And they let you know, here's how much TV time is used for cable. Here's how much is used for broadcast. And here's a breakout of the top streamers. And Max is like 1% somewhere in that neighborhood, but it's well below the leaders, which are YouTube, everything that's on YouTube, on televisions only, and then Netflix, and then Amazon Prime Video, Hulu, Disney Plus, and then there's kind of everybody else like Max and Peacock and Paramount and Pluto and Tubi.
Gotcha. Interesting. Okay. All right, let's go back to, was there anything else on your PDF?
Oh, we should talk about the ranking. The ranking really is the most important thing, especially when we're talking about media value. The median rank for Dynamite among all cable and broadcast, its median rank for this quarter was 96, which is not as good as last year in the same quarter when it was 61. The year before that, though, in 2022, which was after the Wednesday Night War, company a lot hotter than it is now. It was 105. So take that for what it's worth. I suppose it's reflective of, look at everything shed away that would be scripted TV, maybe even reality programming that's becoming less popular. 2 years ago, it was ranking about the same, basically. It went from 105 2 years ago to 96 in this year. Dynamite's ranking is about the same, despite really strong declines in viewership over that time. Collision, its median rank was 168, which is about the same as it was last year, 176. So it's relatively stable despite really significant declines in actual viewership. And Rampage was 211 on its week versus 207 on the prior week. So not a dramatic drop off for Rampage.
Yeah.
RIP.
As we kind of look through here, Rampage is never, the highest they got to is 145. And that was Q3 of 2023. So never really.
But we don't have the entire history here. It might have been higher.
Okay, got it.
Further back and towards his debut with the Punk debut factored in and whatnot. Yes. But let's be cynical here. So like the disappearance of Rampage, you could really, really grift if you wanted to, right? And say Rampage was canceled. It is one less hour of weekly content that was not included in this deal, although this deal is somewhere around $170-180 million AAV, depending on, I think there's some stock involved in this deal that makes it ambiguous, but yeah. This is basically doubling, roughly doubling their deal with less content. But when I had it in mind that, well, maybe they really are working on a deal that might come to fruition with Fox or with another broadcaster, and you could see, oh, Shockwave will be the flagship show on that broadcaster, and Rampage would be the secondary show, maybe. Okay, so they've still got that brand that they're going to use. Now we're at a point here into mid-January where it looks like I'm not expecting any deal with a Fox or anything similar to be announced, and Rampage has just gone away. So it strengthens the argument, the cynical argument that Rampage got canceled, although they did make a strong TV deal.
Yeah, I think it potentially has benefits for AEW in that it forces them, you know, it just became superfluous. There was no reason to watch it. And it just has them focusing out 4 hours instead of five. That didn't seem like a lot, but yeah, 50 less hours on TV, but you know, less to try to be, I have to figure something out. And again, you would be in the arena as I have for many Dynamites, and you just see people just file out afterwards. Mm-hmm. Just wasn't through the years, it was amazing. Rampage became something that people wanted to stick around and see. And it was just like, you know, why are we watching this? You just feel bad for the wrestlers. You feel, it's just not a good look. So it was time for it to die. And then Battle of the Belts itself, which also became one of those things like, what's the point? It just, in this era, it just doesn't work. You know,
I was looking forward to Barry Windham and Ric Flair.
Yes.
That's a really good Battle of the Belts. I recommend that one.
That's right. That's right. All right. Let's go to some of the transactions. We had some arrivals, which mean more cash. Bobby Lashley, Shelton Benjamin.
Did we talk about attendance?
No, we should talk about attendance.
It's down. Average Dynamite in this quarter averaged 3,100, which is down from 4,500 in the prior quarter year. Collision, I've decided that my standard will be to just lump together. When they used to do tapings that were just Rampage, you do end up with a comparable number of events from year to year anyway. 2,300 in this year quarter compared to 3,400. So the averages are down. Even the pay-per-view average in this quarter was down. It's 8,600 compared to the prior year, 9,900. I think it's a similar number of events, right? Three. Because there were three pay-per-views in this year versus last year.
Yeah.
And even total, are they running more events? Are they running more events? Let's see. Probably not. They're running a similar number of events. Maybe even fewer, actually. Anyway, total attendance is down, too. So it's not like, well, there's volume is up and total is up. It's not. It's down as well. We've got, according to WrestleTix data, 84,000 tickets distributed versus 129,000 in the prior year. So.
Yeah,
that is down as well.
And it just continues to point to the numbers that their popularity is down. It's there's no way to deny it from any.
No, everything is great. Everything is great. That's all I hear is everything's great.
Anything else from this PDF that you want to hit on that stood out to you?
No, we talked about pay-per-view and the ratings. Yeah, we're good.
Let's go to some transactions. So some arrivals. Bobby Lashley, Shelton Benjamin, the Costco guys.
Yes.
Like Big Boom AJ.
The casual fans are here now, right?
Casual fans are here at the
door. He did pop a Rampage quarter hour. I have to give him that. Rampage that quarter hour that he was on, which is like, it's just another quarter hour that usually loses viewership, and he popped it.
That's right. There you go. The Rizzler, Big Justice, the whole gang. We're going to be seeing more of them on AEW TV, so get ready. The turnaround is coming. Danny Garcia re-signed. Leo Rush signed a deal. Sting officially confirmed he had signed a multi-year licensing deal with AEW, kind of the first we've heard of.
AEW Legends deal.
Yes, exactly. Viva Van reportedly signed with the company. We haven't seen her yet. And Dustin Rhodes.
I don't even know who Viva Van is.
She's a indie wrestler at the Pacific Northwest. I don't think she's ever won an AEW match. She was, working Dark and Rampage and things like that, and has been around a lot. But she said right at the end of the year that she got signed to a deal, whatever that means. So, and we, in classic AEW fashion, we've not seen her anything like of that or any confirmation. And then Dustin Rhodes re-signed as well. So really getting these young guys in the mix,
He can still go.
That's right. He can. Returns. This is a part of the story, I think, for 2025. Bandido. He'll be in the injured list as well. Mass and Rain. Tony Storm. Kenny Omega. Obviously, the big one there. Adam Copeland. Another big one. Adam Cole.
Cope, you mean Cope.
Sorry.
You got to correct this. You got Adam Copeland here. That's not his name anymore.
I need to contact my legal counsel to make sure I'm covered. No besmirchment on this behalf. Cope, yes. Adam Cole, MJF, Jay White, Mark Davis, Penelope Ford, Powerhouse Hobbs, Sammy Guevara, Will Nightingale, and Julia Hart all came back during this quarter here. So some of their top names in MJF and Cole and Cope and Omega and Tony Storm as well. So we'll see what happens in the first quarter with them. Exits, not a lot. Jimmy Jacobs gone to the happiness of many fans online that blamed him for a lot of the AEW creative.
Has the creative changed now that he's gone?
No, not yet. Not yet. They're afraid he brought his TNA stink over to AEW, but with all the spooky stuff, I guess that was a big thing. That was people complained about. And I put Brian Danielson as a question mark. He has retirement, or not his retirement. Mm-hmm. He lost his match. He was done, supposedly as a full-time wrestler. He made a point to say, I never said retirement. So we don't know. He's going to have neck surgery. He might not have neck surgery. So he could come back in some form or fashion. If he does, not as a regular, but certainly as
what was his capacity, other than being a wrestler, what capacity was he serving in addition to being a wrestler at AEW?
He seemed to be one of Tony Khan's capos and his top guys in terms of leaning on him creatively and being someone to bounce ideas off of. And he also led the disciplinary committee with two lawyers. And yes. So, yeah, that was, I guess, his role.
Is he still on the disciplinary committee?
That's undisclosed. I have no idea. I have no idea. I'm sure if we ask, we'll get a long answer about it.
Yes. I did ask a while. That's how we know there's two lawyers.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You did.
Yeah.
We haven't got an update yet. The injured list. Hologram. Killswitch. Taz. Anthony Henry, Nick Jackson, Big Boom AJ, went in that match with the broken foot. What a tough guy. Working that match with the broken foot. Marshall Vaughn, Eric Bandido, who came back from injury after being out 18 months, immediately concussed himself. Classic. And then Juice Robinson fractured his tibia or fibula, I believe, one of the two. And he is out for some time. We love IP. King of Hearts.
There's a list of trademarks that they've registered.
This is it. During this 3-month period, we have King of Hearts, H-A-R-T.
Has that been used?
Not yet.
Okay.
AEW Max Month.
Has that been used?
Nope, not yet.
Okay.
Wrestle Max.
That's definitely not been used.
No, not yet. Not yet. Parade of Champions, which we assume will be used during...
Are they going to run Texas Stadium?
They might.
Is Texas Stadium still standing?
I don't think so.
Yeah, probably not.
If they do. If it is, it's used for rodeo or something like that, I'm sure. Just because it's Texas. I don't know. Dynamite on 34th Street. Christmas Collision. And then they apply for all three trademarks at the same time. Maximum Carnage, Maximum Combat, and Maximum Mayhem. And they went with, out of the three, Maximum Carnage is what they went for. Shout out to Marvel fans who remember the comic book storyline, as well as a really fun video game back in the day with Spider-Man and Carnage and Venom and all those type of things. Saw the first one on Wednesday, Maximum Carnage Dynamite, and then obviously Maximum Carnage Collision will come up the Saturday, being taped on Thursday night in Cincinnati, Ohio, from 1,500 fans.
So what was the Venom video game? Was that Maximum Carnage?
So Carnage. Carnage was the boy. I'm going to get nerdy here. So Venom was a character that had got an alien symbiote attached to him, and eventually kind of split off.
This is in the Spider-Man universe, right?
Okay. Yes. Yep. And then Carnage was another character that hated Venom, that also was a symbiote, and he was a big character in the
symbiote.
Symbiote alien being, so the alien costume fused with a human being to create a symbiotic relationship. They needed each other.
Symbiote. I'm going to Google that. Should I use an incognito window?
No, definitely not.
Okay.
This is all clean. Clean fun.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. And a big storyline in the 90s. And I remember there's a video game and all this stuff. Some of this came up. I'm like, huh, that's owned by like Disney and Marvel, that whole storyline, but they were able to get it. So yeah, Maximum Carnage.
Marvel didn't challenge him, apparently.
Not yet. Not yet. HR issues. This is brand new. I included this in the rundown. Yes. because there were so many. So Ricky Starks, Malachi Black, Ray Phoenix, Danhausen, Ryan Nemeth, and Maria Kanellis-Bennett. These are all for different reasons. Ricky Starks, again, the whole GCW kerfluffle and not being known why he hasn't been used since March. He did a somewhat tell-all, not really all tell-all, interview with Chris Van Vliet. Malachi Black, who had to come out with a social media statement in November after his match with Adam Cole that I saw in Manchester, New Hampshire. I may have seen Malachi Black's last AEW match. How about that? And he had to say
that match that he had to go on Instagram or whatever and say, everybody's making way too big a deal of this, is actually his last match.
It sounds that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It wouldn't be the first time he said something's not true and then it is true. Including like a back injury, he said it wasn't true, and then it turned out like there's all these things. He's just a liar. I mean, he just does. He just lies, and that's the wrestling. Look, wrestling, we know people lie all the time, but like he could be a good guy. I don't know. He can't tell the truth. It's fine,
but it's not like somebody asked him and he denied it.
That's the best part. He proactively lies, and then. I don't know if that's better. Maybe it's more admirable. I don't know.
Yeah. He volunteers this information.
I know. This guy's going to show up my front door tomorrow.
And it's like he's correcting the record.
Yes. Yes. It's very, very strange. Ray Phoenix, of course, going public and saying some things that not directly saying about AEW, but also everyone assumed it is about AEW. And then he did the classic thing of deleting the tweets. Because once you delete tweets, they never exist.
Nobody ever remembers them.
No, it's that mind wipe, that men in black mind wipe. Right. Thing. Yeah. Danhausen, he didn't specifically go public, but kind of did to Fightful about essentially some issues about him coming back in 2023 and how that was handled. And then he surprisingly came back at Ring of Honor Final Battle in December. Mm-hmm. Surprise appearance. I guess he was called the day before, and he hasn't been on ROH.
Is this the first time? Like, you can't think of too many examples of somebody who has gone public or semi-public with some dissatisfaction with AEW management and then got used on TV again, right?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
Because we got Ricky Starks here, who hasn't been used since what, March of last year.
Yep.
Miro just crossed his 1 year mark of having not been used. Right.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about him in the last episode. Yeah. Ryan Nemeth came, there was some stuff that Fightful got a hold of about some complaints he made to AWHR about CM Punk. And then we also had Maria Kanellis-Bennett, who was going to go public. She said, so she's gone through all types of health issues. Hopefully things are looking better for her on the other side. She said in October that her deal was coming up and essentially, to paraphrase, said she was happy to talk to anyone, essentially was willing to do interviews about her AEW experience. All the stuff started happening with tumor and gland issues and all these crazy things. And we had no idea. Is she covered? Is she not covered? What's going on here? And
it's like it's a recurring theme here in AEW where talent or usually talent express that they're not being communicated with.
Yeah, and this has been a problem for years, and it's very strange. You think it's very easy to fix. They have a lot of people there, and perhaps one person can't make up their mind, and that's causing some issues and all that. Mm-hmm. But I think it was last week, might have been Fightful or someone reported that she and AEW came to some sort of term and agreement. She was still covered through the first part of the year, I believe. So it's always great when you someone goes public, then you try to rectify the issues retroactively, you know, and just never really works out that way.
Is one thing to add to this list. There's even more issues.
Oh boy.
Jamie Hahn.
We're going to talk about that in a minute.
Oh, yes, we are going to talk about that.
Actually, I was going to mention the quote, but Jamie Hahn as well. So Jamie Hahn, who was the love interest of BJ Whitmer, came up with a GoFundMe and essentially needed Mike Sheridan family to sleep in their car due to essentially no income and all this stuff, and had a whole story about one of AEW's legal counsel. She was dealing with Mega before, and then Mega left, and then the new guy she was dealing with. So there's
the general counsel, Chris Beck, yes.
Yes, and there's some general allegations, not great allegation about how she was treated there. And Tony Khan was asked about a call and didn't comment, but we don't know if you heard anything else about that story, but unfortunate all the way around.
Yes. She's alleging that AEW violated an NDA, a settlement that they made, that AEW, that Chris Peck on behalf of AEW and Jamie Hahn made, in the course of Chris Peck, I take it, taking over a lot of the responsibilities that Megha Parrick had. And she's raising, Jamie Hahn is raising the issue that AEW disclosed to BJ Whitmer's counsel, that this agreement existed, which would be purportedly a violation of the NDA, but there's a lot to it. And I guess we'll see if, you know, I don't know if that constitutes a violation, because we're talking about, this was a criminal case in which, to be clear, BJ Whitmer, I don't know if I should say allegedly or not, because he took an Alford plea on allegations of strangulation and criminal trespass, because he entered her home because he knew the passcode, I guess, for her door. And then allegedly they got into a fight and he strangled her. So he ended up with, I believe it was 120 days of house arrest, whereas it looks like he probably would have had a more heavy sentence if his defense attorneys were not able to raise the notion that, well, his former employer was paying her. And the notion would be that, well, you could raise to a jury that, well, she's just trying to get money here, I think is the advantage that gave to Whitmer's counsel. Now, this was a criminal case, and there may have been, we don't know, there may have been legal requirements that these parties had to cooperate and disclose certain things. That's not clear.
So the GoFundMe is still up, $7,500 to date, 44 donations, $20,000 goal. As far as I can tell, none of the language has changed in here at all in terms of the very long. No, there's dates. It's basically the same thing. So nothing has changed here, unfortunately. So that case still is going on. So yeah, quotable quotes. Let's go to some of the various things business related that get said during this quarter. John Moxley saying a hard reset and complete restart of AEW has begun. It's always what you want to hear about a company that's, you know, about to sign a new TV deal or did sign one, and that they got to do a hard reset and complete restart. Right? That's stability.
I mean, that's what WCW needed.
Yep.
And that's what WCW got.
That's right. Tony Khan, most of the top black wrestlers in the world are now in AEW. Tony Khan said it would be an honor to bring AEW to Arena Mexico. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen at some point. Tony Khan said, I've learned so much about marketing from the Costco guys.
What did you learn?
So much about marketing.
Any specifics there? Expand on that.
No, not at this time. Not this time. No, there was no, okay. I don't think any real specifics. The Young Bucks, creative changed 4 or 5 times before dropping the AEW tag team titles. I feel like there's an organization that used to hear that a lot about creative changing.
Yeah, the they time. Had a head of creative who would change his mind a lot. And like right before the show even went to air.
That's right.
There would be decisions not made yet.
Right. While the show was going on. What was that? I don't know. I can't.
I think that we're talking about WWE, but WWE does do production meetings, though, right?
I assume
did,
so.
Did at that time, I think,
yeah.
under Vince. Okay.
Yeah.
Does AEW do production meetings?
I can't confirm or deny that.
Okay. Yeah. The question has been raised, though.
Interesting. Are there well done steaks in those production meetings if they do have them?
I don't know, but they better have ketchup if they do.
Damn right, pal. Tony Khan said, running smaller venues. So this is a question that came up during a call, because very wisely, they're running smaller venues plans to run a lot of small venues to start 2025. They didn't say this, but essentially address the fact that their attendance is down and make the buildings look better, sound better, all that. And he said he hopes to recapture some of the atmosphere, some of the early AEW shows.
Did he acknowledge that attendance was down?
He did not. I don't think he did. No. But he said the atmosphere of some of the early AEW shows, like the ones that there was a lot of fans at, you know.
Yeah.
He loves Cedar Park, Texas. He loves Austin, Texas, those small things, the Curtis Caldwell Center and places like that. He loves those
HEB.
Yeah. HEB, yes. HEB Arena. Yeah. So
cities that I always have to look up and be like, what major metro is this near?
What was the one? Was Foster's, Indiana? Was that one that just came up? Oh, my God. There was... one of the ones that just came up. I'm like, where is this? And yeah, but that's kind of where, you know, where things are at.
Mm-hmm.
They said some of the instances of a dynamite collision. So this is after the schedule got released for the first quarter of the year, saying some of the instances of a dynamite collision taping on the same night would be rare, and only in cases they have international travel planned or the circumstances like before they're going to Australia. They're doing like an early dynamite collision type thing early that week, or early dynamite that week. They're doing some other combined tapes, but there's not a ton. I think there's maybe one or two on the schedule, so not that much.
I think was it the last episode of this that we did? Weren't we discussing how there were no dates announced for 2025 yet?
And, correct. Yeah.
There's some paranoia being had, I think, about that.
And there's some that are getting announced like 3 weeks in advance. I think the Atlanta show was just announced like last week. Okay. Like very, very quick turnarounds there. Let's see. Other TK quotes. He declined to answer questions about Ricky Starks. He couldn't answer about the roster management post Rampage.
I saw a video also where like a fan had Tony sign up a poster that said something about Ricky Starks on it. And you can see Tony say, I can't sign that. And he turned it over and signed the back.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I think it was like free Ricky Starks or something like that. Something to that effect.
That's all right. Probably at the Hammerstein. I'm going to guess.
Could have been.
Yeah. So I asked about roster management post Rampage because they have a lot of people on the roster and they have 50 less hours of TV where they're going to do all these people. It can't just be Ring of Honor.
They'll pay them. That's what they'll do. They'll pay them.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't like to do releases. And when they do, they'll hire somebody back usually after some complaints, but they like the contracts or not, which I guess is good, but also going back to the communication thing puts a lot of people in limbo as far as like, what are we doing here? So we'll see how that happens in 2025. But I expect a lot more of that. He said he's not sure what he's going to get for stats and info from WBD.
And I'm still not either.
I was surprised on this because you think you get something, but he was just kind of like, I don't know what I'm going to get or if I'm going to get anything. And again, if the company's investing in AEW and all this partnership, it's a little bit different than maybe Netflix, which is like, we're paying you, so don't ask for anything. That's what the money's for, to quote Don Draper. But with AEW and WBD, you'd think that there's a little bit more of an effort. And granted, they're not going to know certain demo information, things like that, but they must
suspect that they're sharing quite a bit of data.
Sure.
In both cases, WWE and AEW, with their streaming adventures here. Mm. Whether any of that data will be made public at any point is another question.
Yeah. I think, I mean, it would make sense for, especially in the Netflix WWE relationship, in that if they are, Mark Shapiro said the WWE is, Netflix is going to help them determine essentially what international markets they're going to go to next. And mm-hmm. I'm sure Netflix is like, look, during, you know, certain things, these regions are big, there's certain dips, and basically give them like, fix this stuff, you know?
What would you say are, I guess, for wrestling in general or WWE, AEW for that matter, what are the biggest markets? Obviously the US would be number one, UK, India, but that's not on Netflix yet. It will be by April, I believe. Yeah. Because there's that contract that they're under now with Sony has to run out. The big English speaking markets, Australia. Okay, after that, Canada, of course.
Yeah.
Who could forget Canada? After that, what are the biggest international markets left, do you think?
Let's see. I would say maybe Germany. You said the UK, but Germany.
I would think Germany.
Spain. Yeah, why not Spain? Okay. Italy, okay. You know, okay. France, you know, I think some of those.
Yeah.
There, I want to say China, but I don't know what the relationship is there in terms of how much.
I don't think they've had TV in China for a while. Yeah, WWE, that is, or AEW for that matter.
I mean, there's Japan, but I think in terms of, I was looking at the places they ran PLEs. I think, you know, Germany, France. I think
what I would keep in mind there is yes, France, but these are markets that they can run a live event in and charge a strong ticket price, which they have in France and Germany. If they go to India, that the ticket price is going to have to be a lot lower just because of the median income in those countries, right. Despite perhaps the enormous fandom that they have there.
Exactly. Let's see. Didn't answer on the Jamie Hahn allegation. We talked about that. Didn't answer on the GCW Brett Lauderdale relationship. And again, he did not confirm or deny any ownership stake from WBD. So there was all that from some quotable quotes from a Tony Khan and AEW personnel. Big questions for the next quarter. It's pretty simple. Can they turn the narrative around? Can you turn the numbers around? Will that translate into more fans attending shows and watching? I think I've noticed.
Answer.
There's no excuses for them. They have their, everyone is healthy, basically. Everyone.
Kenny Omega's back.
They have basically everyone is back. They have a ridiculously loaded talent roster full of young talent, experienced talent. They have 4 hours to fill. Mm-hmm. And there's no excuses. They can load up every single show they want, and they're still going to have plenty left for pay-per-views and things like that. They just have to do it. I don't know. I don't know if they can. This is like this.
I don't think they will. I view AEW at this point is in a indefinite stagnation state, much like WWE was in the late 2010s. And it will be that case. That will be the case until someone else is in charge of creative.
Yeah. I felt a little bit of a sea change this week or so. There was a 12-man tag that was announced for Collision.
People talked a lot about that.
Yeah, and it didn't immediately strike me as like, oh my god, this. I thought I heard someone reference it. I'm like, what are people talking about? And I looked, and there was you're starting to get the sense that some of the hardcores and not just the anonymous people are like, this just isn't working for us anymore, you know? And the Death Rider stuff has a lot to do with it. The WWE people have to do with it. Just there gets to be these like inflection points where people are like, I'm good. And the same thing with, you know, the WWE shed that happened during Vince's last 20 years run. You know, eventually you're kind of like, I have other stuff that's going to entertain me. Why am I doing this to myself? Yeah. I can watch more old stuff that makes me feel good than ever before. So why am I going to keep doing this? Those are things I think about, like, you know, you're starting out this new era on Max, and it just feels like the old era. And I wonder if this constant negative drumbeat is just going to start wearing people out to the point like, this isn't cool to watch, you know? So I'm not going to do this. And if I'm going to get my fix, I'm going to get it somewhere else. So I don't know. I'm waiting for some sort of spark, but they have no excuse. They have such a loaded talent roster, and it's going to be a shame if this thing just doesn't work. But I think they have 2 years to try to figure this thing out. They have guaranteed money for three, but I don't think there's any guarantee they get that fourth year renewal at that money. I just don't. I mean, what all of a sudden is going to make it go up and to the right?
As long as Dynamite continues to rank pretty strongly, and this will be shrouded now and confused, obscured somewhat by whatever the max viewership is. But as long as Dynamite continues to do pretty strongly, they've got a pretty good argument, I would think, that they're going to renew and maintain strong media revenues. That aside, I mean, I wrote 2,000 words last week about my opinion about AEW, and I think I just summed it up, though, the last thing I said. It's going to be stagnant. I don't believe that almost any of their fan metrics are going to change the trajectory that they're on. Until there's a different person in charge of creative. That was the case for Vince in WWE, and I think that is the case now for Tony Khan and AEW. All great bookers last about 5 years, and they need to be refreshed. The greatest bookers of all time, Shohei Baba, it lasted five, maybe you could argue 7 years or something like that by the late 90s. Well, by the late 90s, he died. But, you know, Bill Watts and all the rest, they don't usually last longer than about 5 years before, you know, you're working with a lot of the same talent for years and years on end, and you just need somebody with fresh ideas. And I think there's a lot of really great bad options in terms of who could be in charge of creative in the, you know, in the wrestling landscape. But, I've argued that I think Bryan Danielson would be the ideal pick. But there's just, I wonder too, if there's any real grappling and understanding within Tony that popularity is generally down. Cause we don't see any of that publicly. We don't see any acknowledgement of that, even hinting at that. I tried to ask him directly, and I made the mistake of mentioning the TV deal. So he talked about the TV deal, and we are inundated. If you've ever looked at your YouTube algorithm, if you ever watch wrestling stuff on YouTube, you've probably seen tons of thumbnails of, you know, with, you know, people, emphasizing the negative trends in AEW.
Of course.
Before there were even such significant negative trends. And now it's come to fruition as being real. I wonder if it's hard for him to separate that those bad arguments, which have now become good arguments.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that today. And I think every business, when, you know, the early days of social and Twitter, brands engage with consumers a lot more in terms of like, wow, these are areas we didn't know about. We can't be everywhere, but luckily, you know, we can get more and more information. We can fix things. And then everything, human nature took over, and that changed. It was hard to separate out these are things you should really know about versus someone complaining about their flight for the 1 millionth time in a day, right? So I think with AEW and wrestling in general, especially AEW, it's the same thing. How are you supposed to separate the signal from the noise? Who do you go to? Who do you trust? And the biggest thing, I think, for any business leader, are you willing to say there's an issue and we need to resolve it no matter what? What's more important, my pride or the company? And there's been throughout
the course of
human history, for any company, there's been thousands and thousands of cases where it's turned around. Someone's like, I'm going to run this thing, or I'm going to be the head of it, but we need someone else to do the day to day. Or they're like, I'm going to go down this ship no matter what. And, you know, the pride comes before the fall, that saying, right? And I just, you know, I don't know. I think there's a lot of smart people there. And I just have this feeling like the end of this thing going to be like, kind of what if, what could be. And WWE is going to continue to do their thing. And
you think AEW is going to go out of business? Is that what you're saying?
No, but I think AEW today versus 4 years from now is going to be a lot different, unless something drastic changes.
Could be. I tend to think things tend to be just not as extreme as it feels in wrestling. You know, you can look out into the future, make some predictions about the future, and usually what happens is it just tends to be in that direction, but not quite as, you know, quite as extreme as it feels. And again, I think the thing that points to that is the ranking of Dynamite. But I think, you know, there's a lot of issues, and this is where, you know, this is where everybody makes their content money, is talking That's about true. what's wrong with AEW. I hope you make a good thumbnail with like my eyes bugging out or something.
yeah.
But like, for one thing, I mean, there's a little story there about how, you know, Mercedes Moné does not have creative control, even though she said something that could be construed as that, or she did use the words creative control and maybe didn't know exactly what that connotes in wrestling, in terms of like Hulk Hogan's creative control and Bret Hart's reasonable creative control. But the thing is, I think, you know, I don't believe anybody has creative control in their contract talent wise, but they don't need it. I think all, you know, certain talent above a certain level can just go to Tony and largely get whatever they want, even within reasonable requests here. And you see, there's probably not enough editing happening.
Yeah, I would agree. And it takes firm leadership. It takes good leadership, and it takes support from the top down. And we see that all over the place.
It takes firm leadership to avoid having your temperamental top star get into fights with people and with other people who may have their own sensitivities in terms of, I'm of course talking about the Bucks and Punk. Like, I don't think that needed to happen. I don't think Punk was in the right, but I think stronger leadership, that would have never happened. It would never blown over in the way that it did.
No, I agree. Yep. Yeah. And I think, I don't see AEW going out of business anytime soon. But its impact in terms of being the promise when it first started to where it'll be a few years from now, I think.
Right. It's a shame.
It's going to be a lot different. Yeah.
It would be a shame if there wasn't a stronger AEW to compete for talent, to compete for fans' attention. I do believe WWE is better off because there's an AEW that's around there that they know that there's an alternative. I might go so far as to say, we don't know why Vince, I guess we do. Anyway, there's they compete for talent, they compete for fans' time, and it makes talent and maybe even staff get treated a little bit better, and that makes the industry stronger overall. So it would be a shame if AEW continues to decline.
has been, I mean, anyone that says that it hasn't been a positive since they've been in is just, it's completely incorrect, because they've just, the business has been way better and people are making way more money in terms of talent than they were before. It just, it, there's another player out there. Now, granted, what I noticed this past year was a lot of people from WWE, their top stars, chose to re-sign. They're not even edging out to, oh, maybe I should test free agency or anything like that. Like all your top stars, even some of the middle ones too.
If you're a top star in WWE, why would you want to go to AEW at this point?
But that's the thing. They're not even saying, well, maybe I can get a million more a year or half a million more or something right. like that. Even teasing it. There's like, I'm just going to stick around because it's the best. It's the best thing in town. Where I think if this was 2019, 2020, that might be a different conversation altogether.
Because you have issues with, I'm not going to be creatively fulfilled. Mm-hmm. I can't even trust that my talent is going to be recognized properly. And everybody probably feels that way, but you'd be justified in a lot of cases under Vince. So, you know, if I can get the same amount of money in AEW and I can be more creatively satisfied and I can be a part of this promotion that's hot and on a positive trajectory, that was the attraction. And that course has reversed with the exit of Vince and removal of Vince from creative. And in fact, WWE's popularity trends have gone in the opposite direction as well. And now you can make the argument that yes, I'll be on the biggest stage and, you know, maybe my talent will be properly evaluated and maybe I'll even be creatively satisfied over there.
Yeah.
Whereas this is kind of dysfunctional over here.
Yep. I would agree. The other questions, are they going to do releases or are they going to assume let more people, their contracts run out, but do they get to a point where it's just that we just can't support all these people? We'll see.
I don't know. Maybe they'll be profitable. I mean, media revenues are so powerful. Maybe they'll have enough money to still be profitable. But, you know, I think there's also a tendency in Tony to just, you know, to make talent happy and to keep as many as possible. And it's far more than they need at the moment.
Yep. And also, how Max works, ongoing performance. Do we ever get any type of insight numbers? When's the pay-per-views go on there? You know, content stuff, all those type of things. See how that goes. Those are my big questions for the next 2.5 months.
And we have no data whatsoever at this moment. That's public. I'm sure. I believe internally they are sharing data, but there's none that's been reported.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that wraps up 2024 and Q4 as well. And before I let you go, obviously check me out at WrestleNomics, $5 a month, Patreon or Substack. You have $10 a month for the data tier on Patreon. You can hear you every Wednesday on Pollock and Thurston for free, both on your feed and Post Wrestling's feed. Mm-hmm. You can hear you, as you mentioned, read the newsletter that you're going to come out with on Friday nights generally. And you're going to do the audio somewhat after that, if I have the time frame right.
Yeah. And I've been writing about legal stories a lot for Post Wrestling lately.
Yes.
That's free for everybody to read on postwrestling.com.
Yeah. So you can obviously follow on social media as well. You have on Twitter or X, Blue Sky as well. And where else? What else? I forget anything?
I don't know. Don't follow me on Twitter. Just keep your thoughts to yourself.
That's a great way to end it. Brandon Thurston, we'll talk in a couple months. Thanks so much.
See ya. Thanks.